Raj, what I want to start with, first of all, is before we kind of talk about your research and some of the questions that come up, I want to just define happy. Because I'm sure everybody, if you ask them on the street, so what does happy mean mm-hmm. to you or you or you, you're going to get a lot of different answers. So mm-hmm. for the purposes of your work and your research and interest, how were you defining, you know, what it means to be happy or happiness?
I actually define it in the way that people want to define it, you know. So there's different definitions, as you just mentioned. Some people define happiness in terms of, I think, pride. They associate it with the emotion that is the outcome of accomplishing something, being successful, getting a good job, etc. Other people tend to think of happiness more in terms of love, when they visit their family for Thanksgiving or they actually fall in love with somebody. And still other people, and this happens to be slightly older people, define it more in terms of an internal state of peace, about being comfortable in the situation they are in. Life is perfect with its imperfections, that kind of way. And this definition can change within the same person over time too, you know. So I just leave it up to them to define it in whichever way they want it. Of course, you know, across all definitions, there's a commonality, right? It's a positive emotion. I mean, everybody can agree to it. They'd like to be in that state as opposed to run away from it. And my big point is that certain kinds of happiness are more sustainable than other kinds of happiness. Pride is not as sustainable as peace is, for example.
All right. So some kinds of happiness are more sustainable than others. Why is that?
Because of a variety of reasons. I think pride comes from accomplishments, and your sense of how much you've accomplished depends a lot on what other people tell you. And so you kind of hand over your keys to your happiness or your pride to other people, because you can't really know if running a 100 meters race in 14 seconds is a good time or not unless you can compare it to other people. You don't know if $100,000 a year is a good salary or not unless you can compare it to other people, and so on. And there's some other elements to pride that also make it unlikely that you're going to be able to sustain it. For example, everybody wants accomplishments. Everybody wants money. The things on which pride depends are scarce resources that everybody wants. And so if everybody's running after these things in order to feel accomplished, in order to feel rich, and in order to feel famous or beautiful and so on, then not everybody is going to be on the top of the pyramid. And only those who are on the top can feel justifiably proud, because they can look down on other people and think that they're better off than other people are. So there are some, almost by definition, it seems like pride is a difficult state to sustain, because you depend on other people and their feedback for how proud you can feel. And also, since everybody's running after the same things, the resources that make you feel proud, there's a good chance that you're not going to be able to feel proud all the time. You know, sometimes you'll be the winner, other times you won't, and so on.
So I guess the flip side of that is, what then would be the sustainable kind of happiness?
Yeah, so the sustainable kind of happiness, and this again takes a little bit of work. I think it takes a little bit of world experience and having some level of maturity, having gone through a few ups and downs in life. But I think many people, especially, like I said some time back, older people, eventually, sooner or later, arrive at this point where they feel that I can feel comfortable knowing that whatever's going on around me is something that I can handle. Everything that happens to me, in a sense, is for the good. The challenges that I face right now make life interesting, not troublesome or not overwhelming. And so from this way of looking at things, you are comfortable and you feel a sense of being taken care of by the universe, if you will. Okay, so there's no need to bring in the notion of not God here, really. I mean, but I think you feel that life is good as it is, and you wouldn't really change anything. This doesn't mean that you don't have any goals. It's like the analogy I use is, imagine that it's a bright and beautiful sunny day, and you've slept well, you're feeling fresh, and you've eaten a good breakfast, and you're off to play a great game of tennis with somebody. You know, you're motivated to play a game. You have some goals. You want to win. You want to run around. You want to hit the ball. But you wouldn't change anything. You know, there's an opponent who's worthy of you and who's going to bring out the best in you. And that's how you look at your whole life. You know, everything in it. You feel appropriately challenged, and it's very stimulating and absorbing to be in that state. And that state, what I call peace or fulfillment, if you will, is sustaining.
So I want to ask you then this idea of the fundamental happiness paradox, mm-hmm. which, if I'm understanding it right, is the idea that we might have goals mm-hmm. or aspirations that we believe would lead us to happiness, but we actually don't act to get us to that place. Is mm-hmm. Am I understanding that right? Or explain for us what you mean by that fundamental happiness paradox.
Okay.
What's going on there?
Yeah. So if you ask people why they do what they do, or which among many sets of important goals is the most important goal, almost always you'll find that people will respond with happiness. You know, people are at some level aware that everything that I do is ultimately aimed at making me feel better, is aimed at making me more happy. People also think if you give them a list of goals and ask them to rank these goals, people think happiness is a very important goal, if not the most important goal. But at the same time, what we have found is that when people are asked to make decisions, and you literally hand them happiness on a platter, so to speak, you know, happiness is one of the choices, and the other choice is something else, you know, enhancing value for money, or, you know, kind of giving yourself a pat on the back, boosting your ego, whatever. It turns out that a lot of times people end up not choosing the happiness maximizing alternative. Okay, so let me give you a quick example.
Yeah, run us through what that looks like.
Yeah, so I mean, there's just lots of little vignettes that we created that capture this phenomenon. But one of my kind of favorite ones is one that I observed one of my cousins kind of exhibiting. So he had just landed into Austin a few years back, and I took him to one of these salad bars, you know, where you put everything on your plate and you weigh it, right? $6.99 a pound or whatever. And it turns out that he does not like grilled chicken. He likes chicken in general, but he likes it fried rather than grilled. And he absolutely loves chickpeas. Okay. So for him, to load up his plate with chickpeas would have been the more appropriate thing to do from the standpoint of maximizing happiness, right? That's more enjoyable to him. But he also knew that the chicken cost more, right? And it's being weighed by the pound. It's $6.99 a pound, regardless of what you put on your plate. So would you do the happiness maximizing thing of putting in more chickpeas, or would you kind of be tempted to enhance value for money and put more of the chicken on it, right? And it turns out if you ask people which is the happiness maximizing thing to do, everybody says, of course, you've got to put more chickpeas on it, right? But when we ask people, would you be tempted at all to put more chicken on it? And it turns out that a good 24%, you know, say yes. So they would, in fact, put a little bit of chicken on it just to make sure that they're getting a little bit of value for money.
So why do we do? I mean, in this case, it's something like value that's motivating someone to make a choice that doesn't necessarily result in their happiness. Why do we do that?
Okay, so that's a very interesting question, right? I mean, if you dig a little bit deeper, and this is one of those rabbit holes that goes a long way down, it turns out that we are distracted by what I call traditional rules for living. Okay, so we have absorbed many rules for living, and one of the rules emphasizes money as something that we need to maximize in our life. There's an interesting set of studies by a colleague of mine from Chicago called Chris Shee, who has a paper out called Medium Maximization. And in it, he examines what happens when you introduce a medium such as money. People really want, say, vanilla ice cream, right? They prefer vanilla over strawberry, let's say. But vanilla costs 60 units of money. Strawberry costs 100 units of money. So all they need to do is earn 60 units of money and they'd be, you know, all set to buy the vanilla. But it turns out when you introduce this medium and they have to work towards procuring the medium first before they can exchange it for whatever it is that they want, it turns out that they end up maximizing the amount of medium that they get. So they go kind of, you know, for 100 units of the medium, which is not really necessary in this case because they could easily procure the vanilla for 60 units. But they nevertheless end up maximizing this money or the medium. So in short, I guess what I'm trying to say is that people are often distracted by things that society thinks are very important. And society tends to emphasize things that don't necessarily have to do with enjoyment. It emphasizes things like money. It's very important to have a lot of bank balance. It emphasizes success. It emphasizes fame. It emphasizes beauty. It emphasizes taking control of a situation. It emphasizes having clarity on what your principles are, what your values are, what are your goals, and so on. It emphasizes being the center of attention and being somebody who gets a lot of love. It does not emphasize as much the need to love other people, to be compassionate. If you look around, I mean, a lot of the messages emphasize these mediums that take us away from happiness. And I think we have almost subconsciously absorbed a lot of these traditional rules for living, which distract us from what it is that we are ultimately looking for, which is happiness.
Some of the rules for living, though, some of them have to serve a useful purpose. I mean, if you really kind of stretch this and say something like, you know, let's say half the people on the planet decide that drinking champagne and eating pie makes them happy.
Right.
But if half the people on the planet did nothing but that, we'd be in trouble. They'd be in trouble and the whole planet would be in trouble. So some of the rules, though, must function, have a useful function in there somewhere. Because if we all just did whatever we thought made us happy, you know, I think there'd be some problems.
That's a very good point. The first thing I want to say here is that drinking champagne all the time and partying, you might think would make you happy all the time, but it doesn't. It turns out you have hangovers. And so having said that, though, I mean, your broader point is a very good one. Okay, I do think that the desire for resources, for wealth, for fame, for success, accomplishments, etc., has its place. In a society in which we are really striving for survival, it plays a very, very important role. So my message is not really for the people in, say, Afghanistan or, you know, in third world countries who are struggling for survival. I mean, they obviously need to focus on gathering resources, being successful, being famous, being rich, etc. Because for them, it's a matter of survival, you know. I mean, money can and fame or accomplishments can get them, enhance a chance of surviving. So my message really is for the people who have, quote-unquote, already arrived. People like you and me, who are already smart, already successful. We are in the top 1% of the world in terms of our income. And if we continue to run after and be in feverish pursuit of success and money and so on, because we think that more of it is going to make us happier, and the reason we are not happy is because we are not as famous, as successful, as rich as we wanted to be, then I'm here to tell you that that's not going to happen. You know, just chasing those things that you've always chased, and it hasn't given you happiness up to this point, in the way that I define, you know, one way of defining happiness in the sense of peace, it's not going to happen. So there is a really good book by a person called Marshall Goldsmith that's titled What Got You Here Won't Get You There. The pursuit of success, fame, power, money, control will get you a modicum of success. It'll make you better able to survive. No doubt that those things are important up to the point where your survival is in question. Okay, but what got you survival won't get you happiness. At that point, and this is an internal thing, you know, I mean, I can't tell you if you're at the point where you now need to stop focusing on survival-oriented needs and start focusing on flourishing-oriented needs. You know, it's an internal question that only you can answer. But if you feel that, okay, I have really had a good run in my life, I know for a fact from personal experience that more money, more fame, more control is not really going to make me any happier, because I've already seen that, you know, what I thought as a undergraduate kid would be a successful life, I'm already there, you know. And from that standpoint of the undergraduate kid, I thought, okay, if I only reach there, I'd be really happy, I'd be all set. It turns out that I'm still not as set as I thought I was. I'm still more miserable, less happy than I ought to be. If you have arrived at that personal truth, then at that point, you can start looking at the true determinants of happiness. And that's when you change your definition of happiness from pride to peace. You change your traditional rules for living and adopt a new set of rules for living.
You have mentioned some work and some research on the link between happiness and productivity. So I'm wondering if you can just briefly describe for us the relationship there. I mean, I can imagine someone listening to this and having a little bit of fear of, but wait, if I don't, you know, if I don't keep, you know, pursuing this career or whatever it may be, running marathons or working 80 hours a week, I might not accomplish X, Y, and Z as much as I think I ought to, or, you know, follow these rules about what society thinks I ought to do. So what is the relationship between actual true happiness then and productivity in whatever way, whether it's professional or personal productivity, however that's defined?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of fear, and I, to some extent, I imagine it's legitimate that if I take my foot off the pedal, if I'm not feverishly in pursuit of success and accomplishments, then there's a good chance that I might not be as productive as I've been. And I think at a broader level, a lot of people also have this fear that society as a whole might become less productive. You know, as a country, if everybody in America, you know, or a critical mass of people stop yearning for success and accomplishments, then would we fall back, you know, as a country? Would other countries take over? It turns out, at least at the personal level, that it's a little bit of a myth that you need to be nervous and anxious and stressed out and in pursuit of all these goals in order to be productive. There is a really nice TED talk by somebody called Simon Sinek, who talks about why you do something you do is much more important than what you do it for. You know, so being intrinsically motivated, finding your passion, and doing something because it is enjoyable to do it is a much stronger determinant of whether you're ultimately successful or not. So ironically, I guess, from the standpoint of being successful, being accomplished, being famous, being powerful, a more direct route to those things is by not pursuing them directly. Okay, so if you focus on what you find enjoyable, what you find to be your passion, you'd more quickly arrive at being rich and famous. I mean, everybody that you see who's famous, you know, from Steve Jobs to Michael Jackson or whoever else, you know, they've spent a considerable amount of time, more than 10,000 hours or so, focusing on the things that really give them a lot of enjoyment, not because it's going to make them rich or famous or whatever. You know, when they were doing that task, they were immersed in it, lost in it. Lost track of time doing it, you know, and they spent considerable amount of time lost in that activity. And that's what has given them the expertise that's made them rich and famous. It's not the pursuit of the wealth and the fame directly to begin with. So it's a myth. The short answer is you don't need to be worried that you're going to be less productive by not focusing on being accomplished and famous and rich. In fact, chances are you're going to be more productive.
What you said just a minute ago made me think of the book. I think it may be a couple of decades old. I can't remember it. A career guidance book, Do What You Love, The Money Will Follow.
Exactly.
Which sounds like a bit of a similar concept.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even from the societal level, we don't need to worry. I think that if you ask a lot of people who don't have any conflicts of interest and they're being honest about it, they'll tell you that at least in the developed nations, our problem is not that we're not productive. Okay, our problem is not that we're not producing enough widgets. Our problem is, in fact, overconsumption and overproduction. You know, that's the big problem that's facing us, all of humanity. You know, global warming and just the degradation of the environment and the loss of species and what economists call negative externalities. You know, in the process of doing this, you know, function of production and consumption, we are actually making the world much worse for a lot of people. You know, and that's the big problem. It's not that we're not being productive. And so if everybody starts focusing on pursuing their interests and their passions, okay, my hunch is that we'd be productive in much more meaningful ways as a society. We'd probably produce one less widget per unit of time. You know, the next iPad may not come in the next 2 months. It might come in the next 2 years, you know, but so what? You know, that doesn't really enhance our happiness to begin with. And there's a lot of negative externalities that are associated with these overproduction of these widgets anyway. So to me, I mean, I think we'd live in a much better, much happier world, much more meaningfully productive world if we started de-emphasizing accomplishments and pride and success in the conventional sense and start pursuing, and society emphasizes messages that encourages people starting from a very young age as kids to pursue what their passion is. I think we'd end up in a much better state of being.
Are you happy and productive doing the work that you do? I mean, you kind of, I guess you could sort of circle in on yourself talking about this, but have you gone through kind of a similar path to some of this, would you
say? Yeah, I think you have to, right? I mean, I think in the early stages, you start out with maybe an ignorance is bliss kind of a perspective when you haven't really known what the world values when you're a little kid, for example, right? Before you learn the rules for living. Kids are very happy, you know? They don't really engage in as much social comparisons. If they fight, you know, or if they feel jealous of somebody, it's in the moment. And then, you know, by the time their head hits the sack, you know, they've forgotten all of it and they go to sleep, you know, sleep like a baby, as the saying goes, right? But as you absorb these rules for living, then you think that, okay, then I need to live by these rules. We are extremely social animals, and so we are very keen to impress other people. And if other people think that the way in which they're going to respect us or love us is if we accomplish things, and it comes from our parents, from our teachers, from our neighbors, friends, and so on, of course we're going to do all those things, you know, and I was caught up in that too. I still am. It's very difficult to suddenly kind of, you know, transition from the traditional rules for living to a new set of alternative rules, you know. So I've gone through that. And I think there also comes a stage in your life when you realize at some level, you know, it's like one of those startlingly, insightful truths, so to speak, or epiphany, if you will, that ultimately what really matters to me is my internal state of peace and happiness. You know, if I'm fragmented and not harmonious within me, then what's the point of anything that I do? You know, I might be the richest famous person, but if I need sleeping pills to go to sleep and antidepressants just to, you know, feel motivated to work, then what kind of a life is that? You know, I'd much rather be a little beggar in India who's internally happy, at least, you know, even if I'm not acknowledged as a world expert on a particular domain or whatever, right? But explicitly making happiness and the internal peace of mind your goal is also a little bit of a minefield, because it turns out that you can't really focus so explicitly on happiness in order to be happy, because once you start focusing on being happy, then you're constantly measuring your current state against where you want to be. And whenever you notice a discrepancy, then you feel like, you know, bummed, or you feel bad and negative. So you got to make it a priority without chasing it too directly, you know. So that's the beauty of it. It's almost like a Zen thing, you know. So it's like, I think there's many analogies, though. You can make sleep a priority without chasing it, right? If you want to constantly monitor whether you're falling asleep, you won't fall asleep. You know, it's similar to that. So you arrange things in your life. You take a nice bath, you know, don't eat a heavy meal. Try and not watch TV with a lot of negative information in it. Don't check your email, etc., so that you can fall asleep. Similarly, you can put a lot of things in your life in place in order to make happiness a more probable accident in your life, you know. And a big part of that is, you know, not being pressured to follow the societal rules for living, chasing accomplishments and fame and wealth and money. Instead, if you just identify what your passion is, and sometimes that can be difficult too, because we have spent such a long time chasing what others think we should chase that we've forgotten what we really want, you know. It should be one of the simplest things to do, but a lot of us don't even know what we really enjoy doing. But taking the time to identify that, not chasing love and attention from others, but being focused on their needs, you know, that's a very important thing too. That's another rule that we need to break. And not chasing or seeking control over other people in the environment, seeking internal control, you know. Regardless of what happens outside of me, regardless of the weather outside, the weather in my head is always sunny, you know. Just having that as a goal. And finally, you know, for some things, and this is especially true for really smart people, is that they think that they need to have clarity on everything. Is there a God? You know, is abortion a good thing or a bad thing? Are taxes good or bad? And so on. And sometimes issues are just too complicated, you know. And to be able to live with and be comfortable with ambiguity is very important. I think the pressure we put on ourselves to seek that clarity sometimes makes us get wedded to a particular ideology without having thought through it, you know. And that's much more dangerous than living with the ambiguity and acknowledging that I'm not clear on this issue now. God, for example, you know, who knows? Depends on the definition of God, right? I mean, if it's just a life force rather than an entity that's, you know, occupying this thing called heaven, maybe there is a life force, you know. Maybe there's some intelligence out there that's running everything that we see around us, the life. Maybe there is, you know. Why do we need to be so confident that, you know, it's one way or the other? That's a cause for divisiveness too, a lot of times. So I know this was a long answer to your question, but that's what I feel. I've gone through a lot of stages, and I think to a large extent I've arrived at a sense of peace about not necessarily always being at peace, if that makes sense. You know, it's okay. You know, and I feel that that's a good and important milestone to arrive to it in this evolution. And I look forward to more disturbances and oceans of peace in the future.